So, brothers and sisters in the Sangha, Jai Bin. Thank you. I must say, I very much appreciate you as an audience. A speaker is no use without an audience. In fact, you could say that a speaker is only as good as the audience. And I personally always find that what I say comes from the audience. A really good, appreciative audience draws lots of inspiration from me. And I felt very inspired by you as an audience. I know how difficult it is to get around in Nagpur over these few days. There's buns, there's assemblies, but you're here. So I just wanted to express my appreciation for you for coming. I love giving talks. I love speaking about the Dhamma. But I need somebody to talk to. And here you are. And I've got my mouth to speak for me. So we've been learning to follow in Dr. Babasaheb Ambedkar's footsteps. We've been seeing that those footsteps are treading the path of the Bodhisattva. And I've been thinking that I'm really asking quite a lot of you. Some of my friends have been saying, but what you're talking about is at such a high level. I thought yesterday while asking you to at least recite those words of the vow, that was quite daring. But you're with me. We really are travelling at least in imagination the path of the Bodhisattva. And surely this will have a big effect on your lives hereafter. And if it has an effect on your lives, it'll have an effect on the lives of everybody you come in contact with. So let's just look briefly back over the steps we've taken so far. First of all, we looked at preparation. And we've been trying to bring that preparation into our daily lives. We were making offerings and trying to see what effect that had on the mind. We were saluting the shrine, bowing before the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas. And we were trying to see what effect that had on our minds. We've been reciting the refuges and precepts. We've been, I hope, we've been trying to confess. We've been trying to notice when we've not kept the precepts and talk to a friend about it. I hope you've all had at least some experience of that. If you haven't, well, there's still time. Then we've been trying to rejoice in merits. And I hope again that if you haven't been doing that, well, you do it now. Then we've been trying to have an attitude of asking for teaching. In a way, by coming here, you're asking for teaching. And, well, if you have that sort of attitude of openness, well, you'll hear something that's valuable to you. Then we've been trying to have the attitude of transferring the merits of our good deeds to other people. And all of that is ploughing the soil so that the flower of the bodhicitta can rise up. We've seen that if we prepare ourselves in that way, a quite new state of consciousness arises in us. And it's a state of consciousness in which there's no selfishness at all. And that leads us to want to help other beings. We don't really see a difference between ourselves and others. Somebody else's pain is my pain. So we just immediately want to help. And that finds expression in the four bodhisattva vows. And we tried those out last night. We just tried to see what it was like saying them for ourselves. We tried out the vow of conveying all beings across from samsara to nirvana. That's the basic vow. Then we took the vow to extinguish all the kleshas within our own minds. Without getting rid of those kleshas, we can't really help other people. Then we vowed to comprehend all dharmas, so that we understood reality in its depths. And we had a broad understanding of how to practice the Dhamma. And in that way we'd be able to help many, many other people. And finally we vowed to accomplish perfectly the Buddha way. And we saw that that was a commitment to an impossibly high goal. It was a commitment to continuing work upon ourselves without end. So these were the four vows, or the four vows that appear at the end of the Buddha and his Dhamma. And I said that to me it seemed that these were the vows that Baba Sahib himself took. Because he put them there at the end of the Buddha and his Dhamma, it's clear they were very, very important to him. So if we want to follow in his footsteps, we need to take on those vows too. So now we come to the third stage in the Bodhisattva path. And this is going to occupy us for the next 6 nights. And so what we're going to be looking at is the six paramitas. Now I want to clear up a little confusion here. In the Buddha and his Dhamma, there are two lists of paramitas. There's the list of 6 paramitas and the list of 10. And just to make things even more confusing, there is also another list of 10 which is different again. But that list is not found in the Buddha and his Dhamma. So the list of 10 that Baba Sahib refers to come from the Pali tradition. The list of 6 that are found in the Buddha and his Dhamma that I'm going to use over these next days come from the Mahayana tradition. And well, that is the one that we're going to be looking at, the 6 paramitas. It doesn't matter. They basically cover the same ground. Sometimes people get very confused because you can look in different parts of the Dhamma and find different lists. They say, well, there's 6 here, there's 10 there. How can this be? Well, it's quite simple, really. Let's say you're given a cake. And you're given a knife. And somebody says, well, divide that cake. Well, you can cut it into 6 or you can cut it into 10. It's the same cake. But you've got to serve 10 people, so you cut it into 10. You've got to serve 6, so you cut it into 6. But it's the same cake. So the same paramitas, but you can cut it into 6 or you can cut it into 10. But this is quite important to realize. You can imagine people become very, very upset about these things. There's 6 paramitas. No, there are 10. And they form the 6 paramitar group and the 10 paramitar group. Buddha Dharma brackets 6 paramitas. Buddha Dharma brackets 10 paramitas. So you get lots of factions. But actually it's just the same cake. So we don't need to worry about these things. I'm going to use the 6 paramitas tonight. They're the ones that Baba Sahib explains most fully. And I must say I have a strong personal connection with those 6. Because as I told you a few nights ago, they come in the Buddha and his Dhamma in the form of a question and answer session between Subhuti and the Buddha. So Subhuti says to the Buddha, what is the perfection of giving? And then the Buddha gives his answer. So I feel some personal connection there. Because I was named after that Subhuti. So this is why I've chosen these 6. And they're a very nice, very clean, very neat list. And it's the list that's most commonly used in Mahayana Buddhism. Just for those of you who've got that sort of mind, there's another list of 10 in the Mahayana. And that's the 6 plus 4 more. But really the 4 extra ones are just sub-paramitas of the original 6. So, I'm going to refer to the six paramitas that Baba Sahib goes into in some detail. And those paramitas are dana, shila, kshanti, virya, jhana, prajna. Should translate them to English. Yes. So our subject tonight is dana paramita. But before we go any further, we need to sort out what this word paramita means. We know what dana means. But what is dana paramita? There's a difference between dana and dana paramita. This is a very, very important point indeed. Now, to understand this, I need to go back again to the stages of the Bodhisattva path. You remember we had the first preparatory stage. That was making offerings, bowing, going for refuge and so on. Now when you're making, when you're in this preparatory stage, in a way you're not really yet a bodhisattva. The bodhicitta hasn't arisen. You're an apprentice bodhisattva. You're a bodhisattva in training. You're an applicant bodhisattva. An applicant.
Applicant bodhisattva.
You've sent in your application, but the answer hasn't come. And you're still waiting to be posted. And the posting comes in the form of the bodhicitta. And we saw that the bodhicitta represents a quite different state of mind. It's a state of mind that's not based on self. It's a state of mind not based on I or mine. Actually, of course, you understand that there is no I, no Atman. You realize that there's no fixed, unchanging self. Now, this is a difficult point, but we'll go into it much further when we come to deal with prajna. But the point for the time being is that the mind of the bodhisattva, the mind of bodhicitta, is completely selfless. So in other words, the mind of the bodhisattva is based on prajna. Prajna is recognizing that there is no self. It's what we know of in the Pali tradition as perceiving anatta. So once you've seen anatta, there's no self. There's prajna. There's bodhicitta. So you have a deep understanding of the true nature of things. You see things as they really are. You have vipassana. So the bodhicitta is the mind full of prajna. It's the mind full of vipassana. And on that basis, you make the vow. So that's why for us, taking the vow is a kind of rehearsal. It's a bit like an orchestra, a band. To begin with, they're just playing without the audience. They try to make their music as good as possible. And then the audience comes and they play for real. So because the bodhicitta hasn't yet arisen in us, if the bodhicitta hasn't yet arisen within us, then we're kind of rehearsing when we're saying those vows. So you take the vow fully and properly when the bodhicitta has arisen. When prajna fills your mind. When you have vipassana. So, I hope you see the sequence now. You have preparation. The bodhicitta arises. You take the vow. And then you practice the paramitas. So what makes dana, shila, kshanti, virya and dhyana into paramitas is prajna. Dana, shila, kshanti, virya and dhyana.
So, dana, shila, kshanti, virya and dhyana, inko paramita kya banata hai? Bahut prajna banata hai.
Haan, ji. I understand enough Hindi sometimes to see that he's right. So he has to be careful. So all of this will become much clearer as we go along. But so it means, for instance, that we practice dana on two levels. There's the ordinary level on which we practice dana. There's no prajna yet. Well, there's not enough prajna to make the full difference. So there's ordinary dana, you could say. But once prajna has come, once the bodhicitta has arisen, there is dana paramita. And that is the level of the bodhisattva. So we need to practice dana now. But we won't be practicing it yet as a paramita. But we'll be trying more and more to do it as a paramita. And we'll be seeing later how we do that. So, we're going to be looking at dana, and we're going to be trying to see how dana becomes a paramita. So dana is the first of the six paramitas. Now I think this is very significant. It's so often in these sort of lists, dana comes first. So why is that? Why is dana the first practice? So well, it's worth really going into quite fully. What happens when you give? Well, let's start even further back. What happens when you don't give? Well, you're really saying, this is mine. You can't have it. You're owning something, you're possessing something. You're holding it to yourself. So you're reinforcing yourself. When we say this is mine, we're identifying it with ourselves. When you give something to somebody else, you're releasing that selfishness. You could even say every time you give something, when you really give something, something of the bodhicitta is there. When you give something, you give up a little bit of your self-attachment. And that's why giving is so pleasurable. In England, sometimes some people advertise charities saying, give until it hurts. Give until it hurts. But that's not true. You don't give until it hurts, you give until you're weeping with joy. Really giving doesn't hurt. It's not giving that hurts. Because when you're not giving, you're trying to protect, you're trying to keep something for yourself. But when you give, you're sharing with another person. You're going beyond your self-attachment. And that is a very pleasurable, a very enjoyable state of mind. So this is why dana comes first. Dana transcends selfhood. When you give, you're asserting anatta. And dana brings people together. It unites people. I've really experienced this so strongly coming back to India this time. As always when I'm in India, I'm the recipient of a great deal of generosity. The people in whose house I'm staying are just so generous and so kind to us. So of course I feel very, very warmly towards them. I feel very united with them. People keep giving me things. Well, I feel very warm and very close to them. So generosity brings people together. And dana is a step towards prajna. You may not be able to meditate. You may not be able to study the Dhamma. But you can give. Everybody can give something. And it doesn't have to be anything big. I remember my teacher, Bhante Sangrajita, telling a very moving story about giving. He was leaving for England. He was in India for many years and he decided to go back to the West. So he went round all his Tibetan teachers saying goodbye to them.
और उन्हें समारोह के लिए मिलने लगे।
And he went to see one teacher in particular, Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche. Later he became very famous, but at that stage he was quite little known. And he'd just come out of Tibet and he had nothing. He just had to leave everything behind to flee from the Chinese. So he's living in Kalimpong, very, very poor indeed. And when Bhante went to say goodbye to him, he said, "Well, I must give you something." Rinpoche turned to his wife, who was a married lama, and said, "What can we give him?" And they looked at each other, they just didn't know what to give him. So he just went into the kitchen and he found a kitchen knife. And he gave it to Bhante saying, "Look, I'm sorry, this is all I've got to give you, but I want to give you something." And Bhante still has that little knife. And it's just a simple little kitchen knife, just a few rupees. But Bhante said it's one of his most treasured possessions. So it doesn't matter how much you give. It has a very strong effect on the person to whom you give. So, giving is a very important and powerful practice. And you could say that it's the foundation of Buddhism. It's the foundation of the spiritual community, of Sangha. So let me go into it stage by stage. And I'll go quite systematically. There's a great deal said in the tradition about Dana Paramita. So, first of all, who do you give to? Well, obviously, if you're trying to be a Bodhisattva, well, you give to everybody. But you can't really give to everybody. There's so many beings. How can you possibly give to them all? You have to sort of specialize. You have to sort of decide who you're going to give to at least first. Now, the Buddhist tradition is very subtle here. It says, the first people you must give to are those who are closest to you. Your friends and your relatives. And now this is very, very important. Sometimes you see that somebody has given crores and crores of rupees to some charity. And his name is big on the name of that institution. But then you find out a little bit more about him. You find that he's very, very mean with his own family. He can be very generous on a big public scale, but when he's at home, he won't give anybody anything. Well, that's not really Dana. It's just showing off in public. What a big man I am. I'm giving lots of money. But at home, is really mean. So we need to be generous with the people we're closest to. If we can't give to those people, we're not going to give to anybody else in any genuine way. So we should at least start by just being naturally and spontaneously generous with our close friends and our family. So a little bit of homework here. Literally homework. Work to be done at home. Are you generous in this way? Are you generous with your own family, with your own friends? Could you be more generous? But then of course the next set of people you should be generous to are those who are most in need. People who really need help. And, well, here in India, there are so many people who really need help. There are poor people. There are still many people in this country who don't have enough money to buy proper food. I saw the statistics the other day for the number of people in India who live below the poverty level. So, well, there are a lot. It's a big number. So we should help people who really need food. So many people just survive. So we should help them. Those are the first people to target. And, well, we all know that there are many people who suffer not only poverty, but oppression. This was Baba Sahib's life's work. He tried to uplift the downtrodden. And he did so much and was so effective. But the problem is still here in India. There's still so much to do. So we should give generously to those who are in need and who are oppressed. Then we should give to those who are suffering, and especially suffering acutely. People who are physically sick. We need to help them, to serve them, to give to them. But people are also sick in their minds. They're unhappy, they're miserable. In the West, there's so many people who suffer mentally in this sort of way. We have a pretty good health service, but still many, many people are deeply unhappy. So these are the people we should give to. And, well, there's the helpless. People who just can't help themselves. Well, for instance, orphans. I'm very pleased indeed recently that two of our Dhammacharis have adopted orphan children. And I know this is not a common custom in India. But I think it would be very, very good if many Buddhists did adopt if they couldn't have children of their own or wanted to have more children.
बहुत अच्छा है कि अगर उन्हें अपने बच्चे नहीं है तो आप अनाथ बच्चों को गोद ले सकते हैं.
I've said that I don't go to weddings and I don't go to name givings. I don't go to
both.
Yeah.
तो उन्होंने कहा है कि मैं शादियों को नहीं जाऊंगा और जन्मदिन को नहीं जाऊंगा.
Otherwise I'd spend my whole life eating laddus.
नहीं तो मैं पूरी जिंदगी भर मुझे लड्डू खाते ही रहना पड़ेगा.
Because if I go to one person, I have to go to another. But I've said that if people adopt a child, I will try to go. I feel this is such a good development. If you all have adopt children, I won't be able to go to everybody's house, but we could have them all together. Just one big laddu I can eat. So, we should try to help those who are poor, sick, suffering, or helpless. Poor, sick, suffering, or helpless.
So, हम गरीब, बीमार, दुख में हैं और जो अपने आप को मदद नहीं कर सकते, इन लोगों को मदद करने की हमने कोशिश की.
This is the second target, as it were, for our giving.
तो हमारे दान का ये दूसरा ध्येय है, ऐसा हम बोल सकते हैं.
And of course, in our own movement, we've tried to set up social projects that are dana in this sense.
और हम अपने आंदोलन में ऐसे सामाजिक प्रकल्प निर्माण करने की कोशिश करते हैं ताकि इस तरह से कुछ मदद कर सके.
Yesterday there were some people from Taiwan here. I don't know whether they're here tonight, but it's worth mentioning that we get a lot of help from Buddhists in Taiwan in this work.
और कल यहाँ ताइवान के कुछ भाई थे, बंधु भगिनी थे.
That's because in Taiwan, people try to be bodhisattvas. So they're trying to help us in this way. Now I want to mention one more thing under this heading. Now the English are famous for treating animals well. One of my friends, Indian friends, when he came to England, said that if he was a dog, he'd choose to be reborn in England. I think sometimes English people treat dogs better than they do other people. But, yes, I don't think that animals get very well treated here in India. And I find that quite painful. Animals are helpless. We're so much stronger than them. Even tigers we're stronger than, because we can get rifles and shoot them. But so many animals are mistreated here. So if we're following the Bodhisattva path, we'll be treating animals well. So, your homework, what are you doing to help those who need help? Everybody can do something. You can give some money if you've got some to spare. You can give your time. Or you can just support those who are trying to do it. But it would be very good indeed if every one of us did a little bit each week. It would make a real difference. So the third category of those we should direct our dana to is those who are practicing and spreading the Dhamma. I must say, when I come to India, I often feel quite frustrated. I find there are so many people who want to hear the Dhamma. Anywhere you go, if you start communicating the Dhamma, there will be people who will listen. There are some 10, 15 million Buddhists in this country.
One and a half crore.
There are a lot. But many of those don't really get a chance to hear the Dhamma. And there are many other people who would respond to the Dhamma if they heard it. But there are very few people going out and spreading the Dhamma. And I think that we could all do so much more. And if we can't do much ourselves, at least we can help those who are doing it. Now, in some parts of the Buddhist world, this kind of dana is considered only in terms of giving to bhikshus. Now, that's very good. If bhikshus are really practicing and spreading the Dhamma, well, we should support them. Unfortunately, just because they're a bhikshu doesn't mean that they're practicing the Dhamma or spreading it. But if they are, then we should support them. But lay people can spread the Dhamma. And Baba Sahib saw this very clearly. They can spread the Dhamma too. And lay people can sometimes be very effective in spreading the Dhamma. I'm an Anagarika, so I suppose I'm a bhikshu. But I know some of my friends who are married who are much more effective at spreading the Dhamma than I am. Sometimes they know more about the world than I do. So they can be much more effective in communicating. So let's do what we can to support those who are really practicing the Dhamma deeply and trying to spread it to others. So these are the three categories that the tradition says we should concentrate on. We should concentrate on our friends and relatives. Those who are immediately around us. Then those who are in material or psychological need. And then those who are trying to spread the Dhamma. So again, I'd like you all to think quite carefully about this. Do you feel that you're doing this? Could you do more? What could you do? If you do this, you'll be practicing dana, and it'll be starting to be dana paramita. So then we come to, what do we give? Now, you might think it's quite easy. There's just money in your pocket, you give that. But it's much, much more complicated. There are many, many things that you can give. So let's go through this list. So first of all, there is giving material things. Meeting people's real physical needs. People need food, they need water, they need shelter. So we do what we can to meet that need. Of course, we can do that directly. Or we can do it through political activity. So for instance, all of us are citizens, so we should use our vote to try to help people in their material needs. So for instance, I live in the rich West. I'm a citizen. I have a vote. So one of the things that influences who I vote for is their commitment to helping poorer countries. A country like Britain gives so little to other countries in the world. So along with many other people, I've tried to put pressure on the political parties to commit themselves to give more. They could give more and they wouldn't even notice it. I noticed the other day that the British government was at war in Iraq. Even though a majority of people in the country didn't want that. One bomb would have fed hundreds of thousands of people. So we should do what we can to make sure that resources are put in the right direction. So we need to try to help people by giving material things. Or trying to find ways that they get the material things they need. Now, I live in the rich West, and I know very well that material things do not, in the end, bring happiness. I saw recently a survey that had been done in Bihar and in California. Bihar is one of the poorest places in the world. California is one of the richest places in the world. But people in Bihar reported themselves as happier than the people in California. But that's my experience. People seem to be happier here in India than they do in the UK. So material things don't bring happiness. But lack of material things can blight your life. You can't teach the Dhamma to people who are starving. You can't teach the Dhamma to people who haven't even got time to listen to you because they've got to work so hard. So we need to give the material things that relieve their immediate suffering. Then we can give the Dhamma. So the second thing that we can give is quite an unusual thing. We give fearlessness. I went recently to Dehu Road. And you know that's where Baba Sahib installed a statue of the Buddha. And I found it very, very interesting, very significant, that Buddha image has a particular gesture, a mudra. And it's this mudra. The Abhaya mudra. So it's the mudra of fearlessness. So that Buddha figure is saying, don't worry, don't fear. So I thought, well, that's very interesting that Baba Sahib gave that image. Because I think that was Baba Sahib's great gift. He gave fearlessness. He gave courage. He gave a strong sense of responsibility and ability.
Jimmy Daddy,
yeah. That was his gift. It's as if Baba Sahib is in this mudra. Fear not. Have courage. And it's a wonderful gift. In India, especially for many people, the people in the so-called oppressed castes, classes, there's so much insecurity. That's what I find with my Indian friends, that they have a lot of insecurity. But there's material insecurity, social insecurity. In the West, we've got a much more secure life. So we need to give people security, helping them to overcome their insecurity. We need to encourage people to gain confidence in themselves. That's my impression that Baba Sahib gave confidence to lakh crores of people. He was able to encourage and inspire so many people. So we need to help people to overcome their insecurity, their lack of confidence. And we can do this by just our own presence. If you feel quite confident yourself, other people catch confidence from you. If Baba Sahib was here, you'd all feel completely confident. Because he was like a lion. Nobody dared roar louder than him. He was so strong, so confident, so fearless. He could face anybody. And, well, that gives tremendous confidence. Then the next gift is education. Well, again, this was a very favorite task of Baba Sahib's. Educate, organize, agitate. Ani? Marathi mein. But education comes first. Education has done so much for Buddhists in this country. With education, you become an effective citizen. You can take your place in society. You can talk to anybody. And you can make a decent life for yourself and your friends. And there's still a great deal to be done in this respect. We can do a lot more to encourage education in this country. But of course, education isn't just helping you to become a good citizen. It's a basis for the practice of the Dhamma. You don't have to be educated to practice the Dhamma. But if you are educated, Well, you've got many more tools to practice the Dhamma with. And when I say education, I don't just mean knowledge of science or technology or something like that. I think it's very important that there's also the study and knowledge of and appreciation of arts and culture. That's a whole other subject, I won't go into it now. But yes, education is extremely important. Then the Bodhisattva, this is another shocking one, gives his life and limbs. I personally feel that Baba Sahib gave his life to the people of India. He died a relatively young man. He could have lived longer. But he wore himself out working for other people. And sometimes it's necessary to just give yourself to others. We shouldn't do that carelessly. If we're really trying to be bodhisattvas, we're precious to humanity. So we should be careful of our lives. We should wear our helmets when we're travelling on a scooter. If you're not wearing your helmet, well, you're putting at risk a very valuable bodhisattva. So we should be careful of our lives. But sometimes to help other beings, you need to be prepared to give your life. I heard quite recently a very, very moving story which still has a strong impact on me. It was about an aeroplane crash in America. The aeroplane went off the end of the runway into a river. And of course hundreds of people went down with the plane. And a reporter said he saw a man start to dive in to the wreckage. To dive in. He dived in, brought somebody up. Dived in, brought somebody up. Four or five or six times he went down and rescued somebody. Then the reporter saw him go down, but he didn't come back. In his efforts to save others, he'd given his own life. He didn't even think, he just went to help. So sometimes we even have to give our own lives. But we should try to keep our lives as much as is possible to help others. So two more things to give. I hope this isn't too much for you all. But it gives you an idea of just how strong and deep this practice of dana is. The next thing we give is our merits. We've seen something of this already. Well, you know that Buddhism believes in the principle of karma. If you act in an unskillful way, unpleasant consequences come to you.
Agar aap akushal dhang se karya karte hain to uske bure parinam aap par aate hain.
If you act in a skillful way, then positive results come to you. Baba Saheb says this, that the universe is an ethical universe. That there's a law of ethical conservation. Our positive efforts come back to us. So if you really are practicing the Dhamma, you get some positive benefit. Sooner or later you'll feel much happier, much more energy, much more effective. So what do you do with that? Do you just think, ah, well, I feel happy? Okay. Or do you say, well, I feel very happy, I feel very energetic, I'm going to work for the sake of others? If you say that, then you're transferring your merits. The benefits that you've derived from your own practice, you're giving away to other people. So then, the last of the gifts is the most important. And this is Dhammadana. This is the highest gift. This is giving the gift to the Dhamma. I talked about this yesterday, but I just want to remind you of what I said. We need to make sure that the Dhamma doesn't just stay amongst one particular section of society. Every being can be a Buddha. So we can try to get the Dhamma to every single section of society. I think that we need to do much more work here. Still, in Maharashtra, there's one section of society mainly that practices the Dhamma. Most Buddhists still are found in Maharashtra. So we need to get out. We need to spread outside this present community. Outside this present state. I was so pleased yesterday I met two people from Tamil Nadu who were here. Well, I've never met Buddhists from Tamil Nadu before. So I was really pleased that the Dhamma has spread there. And I know there are others from other states too. But let's make a big effort to spread the Dhamma outside the present Buddhist fold. Please don't forget my Bodhisattva mantra. Sarva log aapne log ahe. Then yes, we need to make sure we get to people who are not just the educated. The people who are poor or uneducated. We shouldn't just make it something for people who've got their scooters or their cars even. It should be for people who just got their legs or a bullock cart. It shouldn't be just a motorbike religion. It should be for all forms of transport. And then I mentioned young people. Otherwise, well, Buddhists would just die out. So we need to go to young people too. Well, we can all do something. I think that sometimes we think we need to be a very special sort of person in order to communicate the Dhamma. But what you feel and what you know, you can communicate. You don't need anybody's permission. You can just try to communicate the Dhamma. It's open to everybody to do that. If you want to, just come together with other people and try to do something in your own locality. Don't wait for permission. Who's going to give you permission? You just have to do it. Yes, try to be faithful to the Dhamma. So please, reflect on this. What are you doing? What can you do more? So just two more things to go into. How to give? Well, I'm going to do this very briefly. First of all, you give courteously. You don't just sort of say, you don't just sort of push it on them. You don't patronize them, say, here you are, I'm so big. Sometimes people sort of hold up their coin and say, look, look. But you give it very quietly. And it says quickly. Because if you spend a long time over it, you just cause embarrassment and difficulty. You give modestly. Not puffing yourself up, what a big giver I am. If you do that, you're actually taking, you're not giving. You give happily. You give without distinction. And you give appropriately. You give what people need. You don't give a drunk a bottle of wine. You give people what they really need. So you give in a very pleasant, a very a modest way. You don't talk about it. People don't need to know. You just give. You give because you care for the people that you're giving to. So that brings us to the last point. Why do you give? In a way, this is the most important point. Why give? Well, of course you give because people need. You care for them, you see that they need. You do it not out of selfishness or self-interest. You see that people need, so you give. To begin with, of course, well, you have to practice this. It doesn't come naturally. So you deliberately give. You give even to acquire merit. But then prajna arises. The bodhicitta arises. And you give without thinking of yourself at all. You just see a need and you respond. And I think this is something we all do feel. I'm sure we all feel from time to time impulses to give. If you feel that impulse to give, go with it. But you do it without thinking of yourself as a giver. You don't think of the other person as a receiver. You don't even think of a gift. You just act in a completely spontaneous way. You don't even think of it as giving. That is dana paramita. Well, that's a very lofty level indeed. And we've got a long way to go to get to that point. But we work towards it by giving now. And I hope that you'll all reflect on the points that I've made. I hope you especially remember to give to those who have material need. And I hope that you'll all reflect on whether you're doing this now and whether you could do it more. And I hope that you'll reflect on giving the Dhamma. Think of this last week. Have you given the Dhamma? Have you helped those who are giving the Dhamma? What could you do? Just think of some way in this next week that you could give the Dhamma to others. There are probably nearly 2,000 people here. If each of you went to one other person, that would mean there would be 4,000 people. If three or four of you got together and formed a little group, well, that would be many more people. You just need to do what you can to communicate the Dhamma. You can come to people like my friends Dhammacharis and Dhammacharinis for advice and help, but you do it yourself. You don't need to hold back from teaching and spreading the Dhamma, communicating the Dhamma. And if we do this, if we give in these ways, we will change ourselves. We'll experience the very positive effects of dana. And we will change the world around us. We'll create a more and more positive atmosphere. And we'll be following very much in Baba Sahib's footsteps. He was an outstanding example of dana paramita. So let's commit ourselves to following in his footsteps by practicing dana to the point at which it becomes dana paramita. So there you are, that's dana paramita. And I hope you all see what you can do in order to give dana more fully. So I thought that tonight we'd end, if you want to, by reciting again those four vows that Baba Sahib has at the end of the Buddha and his Dhamma. And then at the end of that, if you want to, we'll recite a verse that expresses transference of merits. If you want to. If you don't want to, you just listen. So that verse expresses the desire that any benefit we've got from this occasion goes to other people. If we don't just keep it to ourselves, we share it with others. The words that we're using, we will use, are a Hindi version of an ancient Sanskrit Buddhist text.
जिन शब्दों में हम ये कहने वाले हैं तो एक प्राचीन संस्कृत गाथाओं का हिंदी रूपांतरण इस्लाम पठन करें।
It was written by a great Buddhist bodhisattva, Shantideva.
और इन गाथाओं को महान भारतीय बोधिसत्व शांतिदेव ने लिखा है।
So if you like, you can join in with those words.
अगर आप चाहते हैं तो मेरे साथ आप कैसे?
So we're going to start with the Bodhisattva vows. I will recite them in English, and then Kumaraji will say them in Hindi. And then you follow him if you want to. After that, I will recite the transference of merit in Hindi. My Hindi is not very good, but you follow me anyway if you want to. Mere piche piche bolie. So first the four vows. There are beings without limit. I vow to convey them all across.
प्राणियों की संख्या असंख्य है मैं प्रतिज्ञा करता हूं उन सबको भवपार करने की
There are kleshas in us without number I vow to extinguish them all
मुझमें अनंत दोष है मैं प्रतिज्ञा करता हूं उन सबको नष्ट करने की
There are truths without end. I vow to comprehend them all. There is the way of Buddha without comparison. I vow to accomplish it perfectly.
Buddha ka dhamma atulaniya hai. Use prapt karne ki
एवं सब करके मैंने जो पुण्यार्जन किया है उस सब प्राणियों का सर्व दुख शमन करी बनूं जैसे पृथ्वी आदि महाभूत अनंत आकाश पर्यंत व्याप्त अनगिमत प्राणियों के नाना प्रकार से भोगी होते हैं वैसे ही आकाश व्याप्त प्राणियों के लिए मैं तब तक नाना प्रकार से उपजीव्य हूँ जब तक कि सब शांति का लाभ न कर ले Thank you.